What are some beloved sneakers that we all agree are amazing, but maybe, just maybe, they haven't aged well in 2025? I asked you, and I'm going to let you know what you said, this time on Fire Footwear. Welcome back to Fire Footwear, everybody. As always, this is your host, Matt Freites, and I hope that this finds you well. I want to thank you all for tuning in once again. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode. Shout out to Carrie. And honestly, I think the idea that maybe hype sneaker releases are coming back, maybe it is valid. Some of you agreed, some of you disagreed, but either way, I'm just glad that you are here. So this week, we are going to switch gears a little bit to a topic that's been on my mind that I honestly thought, how am I going to talk about this without offending people? And what I ended up coming up with was, well, you know what? I'm going to ask you. I'm going to ask the followers and supporters of Fire Footwear to kind of give me some ideas of what they think maybe hasn't aged well in 2025. What do I mean by aged well? And I don't know if I articulated this all that well in terms of TikTok and Instagram, but when I think of it, I think of shoes that are universally beloved in the culture, that there are shoes that I think if you ask any casual sneakerhead, that they would tell you X, Y, or Z is beloved. This is one of the best shoes of all time, whatever kind of accolades you want to pour on some of these shoes. And I think sometimes in sneaker culture, we tend to think that we have to continue to believe something just because it has either always been believed or is believed by a portion of the culture today. And you are free to believe whatever you want. You are free to like, not like, whatever you'd like. That's kind of the whole point, in my opinion. And so when I was thinking about it, I was thinking about, what is a shoe that I would look at that I know objectively many people in the culture would say that is fire, it's one of the greatest shoes of all time. But when I compare it to where we are in 2025 and I look at its aesthetic, I look at its design, maybe it doesn't hold up in terms of how it has aged compared to where we are going in the culture, and especially where we have been in the time frame that this shoe has been out. And I have to say, I was not disappointed by the answers many of you gave, and shout out to everybody who participated. Certainly, TikTok was a great place to do so. A lot of people had opinions about shoes on there. Some people had opinions on YouTube. People had opinions on Instagram. And there was a few that sort of were the same amongst the answers, and so I'm going to talk about those. But I'm going to talk about these in no particular order. Some are going to offend some of you more than others, and some of them I think are very interesting. So we're going to start in the year 1995, and that is with the Stackhouse Ones. Does everybody remember Fila? It's a brand that I associate with the 90s. It is a brand that I associate with the Sopranos, and it's a brand that we really haven't seen a whole lot from in, what, 20 years or so? Maybe that's unfair. Maybe it's been about 15 years. But when I think about Fila, I think about the 90s, I think about the early 2000s, and I think of it as an old brand. Jerry Stackhouse is an old player. He's been retired for quite a while, but this was his first signature shoe. And when you go back and look at it, does it hold up today? When I look at it, I see a product of a very specific time frame, and you could probably make that argument for a lot of retros that are coming out. But I think that there was a period of time in the 90s where designs were really fixated in that time period. And when you try to bring them forward, they don't really match. There's no real way to update them to today's standards. And so if I were to rate this shoe on a scale of 1 to 10 of how does it age, I kind of want to give it a 2. It has this sort of spaghetti look. It looks very similar to the Barclays from 1994, but it doesn't really have that same appeal. I think that it is sort of held down by the fact that it's part of a brand that really didn't go anywhere. I mean, outside of Grant Hills, Fila really didn't do a whole lot in the basketball court. It had a very short shelf life. And so this was an interesting one because it's a really big pullback from the past, but I was glad that this person brought it up. And then there's the Air Command Force. Now, the Air Command Force, of course, there's a colorway that is associated with White Men Can't Jump. That movie is from 1991, 1992, somewhere in that time frame. There was, of course, the Jordan 312, which was designed after the Air Command Force from White Men Can't Jump. It was actually the first sneaker that I bought when I got back into the culture. But when you look at this silhouette is incredibly dated. It's very large. It's very bulky. It's very tall. It does have shades of some other Air Jordan elements. It has shades of other trainers from the time period. But as a collection, it really is not that great and it doesn't really hold up. Now, of course, if you have a nostalgic feel about it, sure, feel free, go ahead, love it. But I think you're not going to see too many of those retroed and too many of those fly off of the shelves, because I just don't think that it's a silhouette that really aged well at all. I think it's, again, like the Stackhouse ones, is very fixated on that time period. And so for that, I would probably say, again, this is probably a 2 out of 10 in terms of has it aged well. I think that the color blocking on it and the color palette of it certainly can be applied today, because we're doing a great job with retro things. If you look at the NFL and you look at their uniforms, those 80s and 90s Seahawks jerseys are straight fire, like objectively straight fire. But this is not one of those that I think can really be brought up. So that was an interesting one. And if we're sticking with older shoes, now this one's interesting because it really could be considered on the Mount Rushmore of sneaker silhouettes. And that was the Air Force One. And that got brought up quite a few times. I don't know how I feel about this one, but I think I have a theory. I think the Air Force One is still a great silhouette in terms of its place in history. I mean, it debuted in 1982. It predates most of the silhouettes that the culture still looks for today in terms of Jordans and Dunks and so forth. And I think that it still has a place in the culture. And every so often, an Air Force One will come out or maybe be retroed. I'm thinking about the linens, and people feel a way about it. But the Air Force One is bulky, and it just doesn't fit the aesthetic of where we have gone in how we design many consumer products today. If you look at cars from the 80s and you look at cars now, the streamlining, the sleekness of them, the shoes that we are currently making, the sneakers that we are wearing fit that aesthetic as well. And the Air Force One, while it will always, always, always be a classic, I do agree with the fact that it hasn't aged as well as many people think. You don't see a lot of Air Force Ones in the culture. You see a lot of younger people beating them up. The crisp white Air Force One, in my opinion, has been replaced by a shoe, and I believe that that is the GR Dunk. When I say the GR Dunk, I think of white mixed with other color, panda, things like that. I think that that is more akin to the crisp white Air Force One, because so many of those dunks are so accessible. The Panda Dunk is now accessible everywhere, and you can even get it at a discount if you're looking for it. That's a shoe that goes with everything. And it's a shoe that I think is easier to have in your collection and style with so many different fits. And I just think the Air Force One has sort of aged out of that. Now, no shade if you love the Air Force One. I still have some Air Force Ones in my collection, but I don't wear them as often as other things. So I think if we're looking at aging, if we're trying to give a rating to that, I would say it's probably 5 out of 10 in terms of aged well, because it's always going to have a place. It just maybe has been replaced by other silhouettes. If we go back into the 90s, another silhouette that came up that kind of brings up a more general category, but that's the Foamposite. The Foamposite is still a shoe that you see released today. People do feel a certain way about it. Shout out to Julius, who is a listener of the show, who I know loves Foamposites. And I even did an episode trying to sort of track down the history of the Foamposite. And people do feel a way about it. So much so that the Galaxy Foamposite, one of the most infamous sneaker releases of all time, are going to be releasing in February. People feel that way. The Paranormans. There are a lot of great Foamposites, but that shoe is bulky. And that shoe, again, goes back to a time period and a player in Penny Hardaway that has really faded out of young people's minds. Penny Hardaway is a college basketball coach. Mike Bibby famously wore them in the national championship game. He has been long retired from the NBA. He's swole now, but he's been long retired. And the Foamposite does still get a shine. But when I look at the Foamposite, I do think that it is limited by today's standards in terms of design. Wale obviously did a great Foamposite with the DMV Foamposite, and I did put that in my Sneaker of the Year discussion. It was objectively great. But I can understand people feeling that the silhouette of the Foamposite hasn't really aged well, because it is definitely something that gives you 90s vibes. But I think people still love it, and I think that there is always going to be an audience for it. I just think that as we get further along in 10 years, the people who still like the Foamposite maybe aren't going to be around. And the people that are coming up behind us are probably not going to like the Foamposite. I can tell you that that episode got a lot of hate because people said the Foamposite is the ugliest shoe that I've ever seen. And these are younger people. So how do I feel about the Foamposite? Well, I think the Foamposite is kind of in the same realm as the Air Force One. It's a 5 out of 10, mainly because there is still an audience for it. But in 2025, when things have become sleeker, things have become smaller, In some ways, it maybe hasn't caught up to everything. But I mean, hey, New Balance, the dad shoe era. I mean, there were bulky shoes that still came out, but they had a finite shelf life. And I think the Foamposite, though, still has a lot of fire in it. And so in that regard, I don't think it quite gets up to the standard of it doesn't look good in 2025. And if we're going to stick with bulky shoes, this is one that was submitted to me that I had been thinking about in my mind, but I knew that it was going to be controversial. And this particular submission were the Red October Yeezy 2s. But really, when I made this list, what I had already put on the list was the Yeezy 1 and the Yeezy 2. Now, hear me out. I know that the Nike Air Yeezy 1 and the Air Yeezy 2 were revolutionary at the time. They 100% were. Kanye was at the peak of his game at that time, and he was doing things that nobody else was doing. Now, the Yeezy 1 and the Yeezy 2 obviously looked a lot like the Louis Vuitton shoe that he had designed, I think back in like 04, 05, somewhere in that time frame. Somebody can fact check me on that. But the whole point is that he had designed that shoe, which was a luxury version of this shoe. Now, the Yeezy 2 obviously took hits from the Air Tech Challenge. You saw the strap over the forefoot. Obviously, those are things that you still see today. They do give you 90s vibes. And the details of the three colorways of the Yeezy 2 specifically, the solar reds, the platinums, and of course the red Octobers, the details are there. The quality of the material is there. But that shoe is a boot. They will always be in the pantheon of one of the coolest silhouettes ever designed because they were unlike anything else. And of course, with the red October specifically, the nature of that release, the story, the lore, like I talked about last week, will always follow it. It will always give it that shine. But if I'm looking at shoes today, if a shoe that looks very similar to the Nike Air Yeezy 2 and even the Yeezy 1 comes out today that isn't associated with Kanye West or isn't a direct retro of either of those silhouettes, are people buying it? Is it something that's going to hit the hype button in the culture? I really don't think so. And while I know they're beloved and I know a lot of people are going to hate this, I do feel like it's a 3 out of 10 because it just doesn't fit today. And I just don't think that if a shoe like that without any of the hype associated with it came out today, that people would feel a way about it. And I hate saying that because Kanye West has obviously done a ton of work in sneakers. He has made a huge indelible mark on sneakers, no doubt. But that particular shoe just really hasn't aged well. And in that same realm, I had a lot of people bring up Yeezys in general, but there were two silhouettes that people brought up. One of them, the Quantum, which was a basketball shoe. It was a very limited run. They didn't have a lot of colorways of it. It never really made a mark. So we're going to take that out of the equation. If you love that shoe, go love that shoe. It is out of this discussion. But the one that I actually had on my list that was submitted to me as well was the Yeezy 350. Now, this particular supporter put the V1, but I think the V2 falls into that category as well. The Yeezy 350 had such a high in this culture that it had so many colorways come out and they sold out. But when you look at it today, it looks like a glorified slipper. I don't see many people wearing Yeezys in terms of the 350s out. I do see some of them, but of course they're Yeezy 350s that people have owned for a while. And they're a very specific aesthetic in terms of how you're styling it. For instance, if I were to go into the office that I work, I would not wear a pair of Yeezy 350s, but I might wear a nice pair of Jordan 1s. I might wear a pair of Dunks, something like that, that could fit the aesthetic that I was going for in terms of what is appropriate for my office place. I'm not sure I could pull that off with a Yeezy 350. I think a lot of people bought so many 350s. And I can tell you that from personal experience, the Yeezy 350s that I have, I almost never wear. It's really difficult for me as a bigger person to wear them. But I know a lot of people who have set aside their 350s because they need to sell them because they just haven't aged well in their mind. And that to me is an indicator that the 350, while at the time, again, much like the Yeezy 2 and Yeezy 1 were revolutionary, the Yeezy 350 was revolutionary. The Turtle Doves, the Pirates, like any of the ones that you want to name, all of them were great. But I think in 2025, almost a decade later, I don't think that they live up. I don't think that they age well. And again, it doesn't mean that they weren't great at the time. And it doesn't mean that the ones that you have aren't great. It just means that when you think about it in terms of how things age, are we going to be looking at the Yeezy 350 in 20 years the way we look at the Jordan 1, the way we look at the Dunk? I don't know. I don't think it's going to stand that test of time. And again, this is really difficult because it's a hot take. But I think that that also sits in the 3-4 out of 10 category because I just think that you don't see them very often anymore. I think that they are fading away from the minds of the culture. That could be due to the fact that Kanye really isn't doing anything anymore. But I just think that it was a moment in time where it was so different that it captured the aura of the culture. But now, when history tells its story, I'm not sure that that story is going to be, this is a classic, an objective classic. I just don't think it will. So the Yeezy 350, whoever suggested that, you knew it was going to be hot, and it was hot. There's a couple more I want to go over. So we had another supporter who put the React 87. Now the React 87 made me laugh because it was one that I had considered, but sort of had as like an outside looking in. And this one is basically lightning in a bottle. Like if you were to say, what is a good example in sneakers of lightning in a bottle? That might be it. The React 87 came out and boy, it was different than anything else. And it was so hot for the longest time. People had to have it, especially that first colorway. And I swear within a calendar year, it was gone. They were in the outlets. They were easy to get and people just forgot about them. I don't know what it was about this shoe, but if you look at it today, it looks ridiculous. Like it really does look ridiculous. And it was an attempt at innovation. It was an attempt at making something different. And they certainly did that. But now in 2025, nobody remembers it really, outside of the person who obviously suggested it. But you don't see them on the streets. You don't see them in the culture. You don't see them re-released or retro. No, it's something that was so hot for such a small period of time. And I think we all came to our senses very quickly and said no. Another one that really hit close to home, and there's one more after this, but another one that hit close to home for me, somebody did say all of the Sakai shoes. Now, this one is fascinating because when I saw this one, this is not one that I actually had on my list. Like I did a preliminary list. And so I went down to my collection and I got the blue multicolorway, which is the one that I own. And I looked at it and I was reminded of, I believe it was the 2019 NFL draft. And I think it was Marcus Mariota walking out on stage with these shoes. They had not released yet. It was like nothing I had ever seen. And I looked at them and I thought, I have to have those. I love the history behind it. I love the fact that they put two silhouettes on top of each other. Obviously the waffle outsole, the true waffle outsole, of course the LDV, and all of it was designed in a way that it looked different. I love the fact that there were multiple swooshes. It was a very unique looking shoe, but the silhouette of it, especially the first ones, really was something you could wear with a lot of different things. I love wearing them with shorts, for instance. But then all of a sudden, Sakai started coming out with so many different silhouettes. And at some point in time, they kind of jumped the shark. At some point in time, it became oversaturated. And when you look at Sakai's now, when's the last time we saw a Sakai release at all in terms of this particular design? I don't think there's been one in quite a while. Maybe it has been a few years. I think the Cortez series was maybe the last one that they went through, but even that was kind of forgettable. And so how do I feel about the Sakais? Again, this is tough because I love that shoe a lot. I love that colorway a lot. But if I'm being perfectly honest and I'm being honest about where that shoe falls in my rotation, I definitely don't wear it as much as I thought that I would. And so I think it kind of sits in that, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 range in terms of aging, because I just think that the design again was great. It has a huge nod to history. And if you're into that stuff, man, bless you. I love that stuff too. But I just don't know if it holds up today that somebody's going to come up to me and be like, yo, those are the Sakais. I don't know. Maybe they will. I haven't had it happen yet. And so that kind of leads me to believe that maybe this person is right. And maybe I haven't really put enough thought into it. And my personal bias about that shoe has clouded my judgment. So there's one more left. Now, there were some other ones that I will share maybe on Instagram one day. But this one was interesting. And it was Travis Scott releases. That's all that it said. And Travis Scott releases is obviously very broad, but Travis Scott releases, I think, means a certain thing to some people in the culture. The person that put this in, full transparency, is somebody that I know, and it is somebody who has been in the game for a very long time. Travis Scott releases have become to the point where you expect them now. But back in 2019, when that first Mocha One dropped, that was unexpected. And it definitely deserves the praise that it gets. It's a great shoe. Travis Scott has a really good gig. He gets to design Jordans. He gets to design Nikes. He basically gets to do whatever he wants. And if you look at his catalog, he has done a lot of great work. I have been very critical of the fact that he has been designing so many Jordan 1 lows to the point that it takes away the special nature of it. And so when you think about aging well, I always think about the silhouette and whether it's aesthetic and the way that it was designed, whether it fits in 2025. But this is an interesting submission because I think maybe the idea of Travis Scott releases hasn't aged well. I mean, yes, they sell out, of course, and he is trying to do new things with the Jumpman Jack and the Field Jacks and all of that stuff. I think that stuff is great. I think it's great that they're putting new design elements on it, that they're trying to make new shoes. They're not just always slapping Travis Scott on a Jordan 1. But this one, I think I leave up to you because I don't know how to rate this, because I think that the Jordan 1 Low is a nice silhouette. I think that if you have a Jordan 1 Low in any Travis colorway, I think you're good to go. Do I think we need to continue to put out two or three a year? No. Do I think we need Travis to be designing shoes forever? No. But it is what it is. He sells merchandise, and that's really what Nike is about. So I'd love to know how you feel about any of these shoes. I would obviously love to know if there are any submissions that you would like to put in. Of course, you can call the Fire Footwear Hotline, area code 202-643-9170. You can find that in the show notes. Of course, like I said last week, I know that I hate kind of asking for this support, but we are so close to our goals on YouTube. We're so close to our goals on TikTok. And if you could throw me a follow, at Fire Footwear Pod is the handle for both. Of course, if you're on YouTube, Fire Footwear Sneakers Talk is what you would search. Like I said, the support that I get for this show, I'm amazed that anybody listens to it at all. The way that it started on a TV tray with a $10 microphone, and here we are on YouTube doing different videos. I'm having so much fun doing this content. And ratings, reviews, subscriptions on the podcast, wherever it is you listen, all of that matters and all of that helps this track. All of that helps it get found. And it means a lot to me when people put in reviews. I did get a really, really nice review from across the pond in England. So I thank you for that. And I thank everybody who has supported the show. It means a lot. But if you could just do me that solid, subscribe, like, review, all that stuff, it means a lot to me. Fam, I hope this finds you well. I hope this finds you safe. And as always, I will talk to you next week with another great topic. This is Fire Footwear. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on Fire Footwear are those of Matt Freites and his guest, and not necessarily those of the Matty Ice Media Network. Fire Footwear is exclusively owned by Matt Freites and is brought to you by the Matty Ice Media Network.